Today's guest on the Bitcoin.com news podcast is Omar Zaki, also known as Brainjar. Omar is the founder of Composable and Picasso. Welcome to the show, Omar.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So why don't you start by introducing yourself and the team and let us know what you're working on.
Yeah, sure. So, I'm the founder of Composable. We started in 2021. We're a team of 30 people now. Our focus really has been how to bring this kind of mass adoption moment for crypto. And, you know, a lot of projects have been focused on this. And I think really this comes down to sort of three core areas, expression, execution, and settlement. And so, you know, what that actually means is expression is like, you know, how can we have users express in the fewest number of steps what they'd like to accomplish? Execution is ensuring that users get best execution, and settlement is making sure that this happens in a timely manner for the cheapest cost possible. And so what you can envision is kind of this super application that allows users to do anything that they want in the crypto ecosystem on chain in a sort of credibly verifiable manner. So upon building out this vision, we realized that the first thing we have to address is cross-chain interoperability. And so that's what the Picasso project focuses on. We're introducing trust minimized bridging through the inter-blockchain communication protocol, using light client verification on both sides, to bridge Cosmos, Ethereum, Solana, Kusama, and Polkadot, and rollups as well in the future. And on top of this interoperability framework, we're building a super app called Mantis that will be able to allow users to type in what they'd like to execute and have these things get executed over IBC. So really trying to bring about a way where users can depart from centralized exchange experiences and try to do as many things on chain in the safest way possible.
Can you explain further about what does the IBC means?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, there's a lot of different bridges out there. There are, you know, there's Axelar, there's Layer Zero, Wormhole, Synapse. These bridges, for the most part, allow for, you know, bridging between two chains, but the experience is obviously slow. Also costs a lot, and the security is probably the biggest issue as well, you know, whereby you have a trusted third party in the middle that is doing the verification for you. And so within Cosmos, we have this protocol called the Inter-Blockchain Communication Protocol, which allows for light clients on both sides to verify, you know, a light client on chain B, verifying consensus proofs and block headers of chain A, and like client on chain A of, on chain B. And so this has existed in the Cosmos ecosystem for many years, since 2021. It is the primary way that people transfer assets from one Cosmos chain to another. But it wasn't until we extended this protocol that now there is a way to do IBC outside of the Cosmos ecosystem. So now chains like Ethereum, like Solana, like Polkadot and Kusama can now communicate with the broader IBC ecosystem in this manner. And so we recently in July launched for the first time ever IBC outside of Cosmos to Polkadot, and in the coming weeks and months, hope to launch Ethereum and Solana and some of these other chains that I've mentioned.
And the advantages to users would be added security and lower fees, if I understand correctly?
Exactly, yeah. So added security is the first and foremost. And then the second is speed and cheaper costs. So, you know, when right now, if you're trying to bridge between Cosmos and Ethereum, you use Axelar. It's about 20 minutes to bridge, unless you use Squid Router, which kind of has like market makers in between that facilitate bridging. which is, you know, a fine way of bridging. But if you don't want to you know, deal with market makers at all, and you just simply want to transact, we will be able to introduce a solution that is faster and cheaper than existing methodologies.
That sounds great for, you know, builders themselves, not just, you know, end users.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that, you know, that's the thing that we're also very excited about, is like thinking about, once this exists, how is it possible that builders can actually mess with, you know, this new standard of interoperability between these different chains?
And like you've mentioned, the timetable for doing this is during this year, right? 2024.
Yeah, so we've already extended the IBC protocol to Polkadot and Kusama. So this is already kind of in production with these, with this new ecosystem. So IBC has already been expanded. Mm-hmm. And now we're doing this for Ethereum and Solana, you know, two ecosystems that, you know, people obviously use a lot more than Polkadot and Kusama. And so, yeah, like the hope is to get these things out over the next few weeks.
Well, so relatively very fast, you know, within weeks or either a couple of months, we can see it on different chains.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, this is something we've been building for quite some time. You know, we've been around since, you know, 2021. So, you know, it is something we're excited to finally release.
Well, all the power to you for sticking through the harsh winter in the industry.
Absolutely.
And I've also seen that you have a token that's related to the system, the Pika token. If you can tell us, you know, how that ties in.
Yeah, sure. So the Pika token, so to power all of this IBC connectivity, we decided to build a layer one blockchain that is focused on interoperability. So when you're bridging from Ethereum to Solana, for instance, you'll be passing through this layer one blockchain called, you know, the Picasso network. The Picasso network is powered by the Pika token. The Pika token accrues value from bridging fees. So we charge a fee for when users are transferring from one ecosystem to the next. This value accrues to the Pika token. Additionally, we are launching a restaking layer on Solana. Restaking is very important to us to improve security, just for the whole system, but also for interesting use cases like, you know, cross-domain MEV, proposer builder separation in different ecosystems, potentially also introducing, you know, permission relayers that do very specialized functions. So, like restaking yield also accrues value to the Pika token as well. So, you know, the narrative of this network is basically an interoperability hub that is able to sustain these interesting use cases that we've been discussing, such as the super app and other kind of order flow related products.
The super app is Mantis, correct?
Correct.
So can you tell us more about Mantis, please? And you know, what exactly does it mean, you know, by a super app?
Yeah, so, you know, I've really struggled to, for instance, you know, even today, you know, for instance, I've been in crypto since 2012, 2013. I was one of the first users of Curve and Aave, Uniswap, Decentraland, you know, all these protocols that were coming out, you know, 2018, 2019, 2020. And one of the things that I quickly realized was, you know, the need for a way to do things simply to traverse these different ecosystems. And so, you know, I'm really trying to build a product that I would actually use myself. So something where, you know, I don't have to spend 30 minutes to figure out a new farm and then figure out how to get to that farm, or, you know, there's a new NFT I want to purchase. I don't have to spend, you know, hours figuring out how to get there. You know, really this introduces a straightforward mechanism where all I have to do is either, you know, copy paste something that someone else has done, you know, somebody, you know, like Ansem or something, who is, you know, constantly talking about different opportunities, different things to do on chain, you know, instead of him tweeting out, you know, just simple, you know, just, hey, check this out. Like, he can actually tweet out links, and others, you know, like him that also, you know, want to be able to give their users a simple way to participate in something, like whether it's an NFT drop, whether it's like lending, borrowing, swapping. You know, we're really trying to make this kind of copy trading experience straightforward and simple for all kind of users. And so that's kind of going to be the point of Mantis. And there will be this kind of, as I mentioned, as I hinted at, social kind of spy gamification component, where we're going to hopefully be able to, you know, build communities around what's happening as well through the Mantis application.
User experience is definitely a challenge in the current DeFi ecosystem, I would say. If you can crack that up, you know, that's going to be a big win for everybody.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's not just us looking at really drastically improving UX, you know, like there's also folks like Dream OS that are looking to do this too. You know, we hope to, but we're also, you know, the main difference between us and for instance, Dream OS and like other user experiences that I'm sure will pop up in 2024 is like, we also power this backend engine. So somebody like a Dream OS would plug into us. You know, really, like what we want to be, you know, long term, is to become this kind of almost like a dark pool in the equities market, you know, chain abstraction, you know, APIs that a fintech or, you know, Robinhood can basically just sit on top of and power the rest, you know, power their users' interaction with different activities on chain.
Activities such as, swapping and staking, or what other activities do you see, you know, operating in that model?
Yeah, pretty much everything. And I know it sounds like, you know, too good to be true, but like, you know, the way that systems work is, you know, everything on blockchains is just a call instruction, right, for the most part. And so if you're able to do a generalizable message call to different chains, you know, we're able to call, you know, purchase functions on NFTs, you know, in Tensor, for instance, we're able to allow for lending and borrowing through Aave on Ethereum. We're able to allow for, you know, yield farming through interacting with Curve, for instance. So, you know, we'll probably have a limited set of functionalities to begin with, like primarily focused on swaps. But over time, you know, our focus shifts from building the core kind of infrastructure to then kind of the, you know, integrations. So making more and more functionalities possible.
Let's say I have a NFT project that I want people to buy, and I want to advertise it to people which, you know, are not necessarily from the crypto community. Okay. And I just want to get people to purchase an NFT, right? Is that possible in your mind, you know, within a reasonable time frame, like, you know, 2024, 2025, maybe, that we'll have such solutions in DeFi?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the piece that we're not focused on as much is, you know, how does somebody get from cash to crypto, right? I think that's still, there's a lot of startups focused on, you know, how do you onboard? But once you're onboarded, you know, we can certainly take over, right? So if you're an NFT project, instead of just linking, you know, your application, your drop or something like that from Tensor or OpenSea, you can just provide a link that allows users to just, like, you know, say they're starting on Solana and they need to get to Ethereum to purchase this NFT on OpenSea. Like, that's exactly what this solution is designed for. So I do think we'll see that. As far as the onboarding piece, we're a little bit more removed from onboarding. We're going to mostly just focus on, you know, whatever's out there. Like, hopefully someone builds some sort of simple way to get from bank to crypto or from cash to crypto. I know there's like some folks like Stripe and Western Union. I wouldn't be surprised if these folks, you know, start trying to address these things.
Yeah, it would be interesting if if someone will offer, you know, such an API for on ramping, right? And then you can get with your API to, you know, everything else, right? So you can, I can imagine like the simplest app from a user experience, you know, would be an app where you just, purchase and you can put in your, let's say credit card and you get the asset on chain in your wallet without even, you know, knowing what parts are in there. But I guess, you know, that's going to be a while until everything is built up.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Can you tell us more about the composable side, right? How does that fit into the picture, and what is the composable VM?
Sure. So yeah, so like everything we're saying about Mantis, like basically composable, the project is going to rebrand to Mantis, and its product is going to be this Mantis Super App. And so diving a little bit more deeply, how does the Mantis Super App actually work? Well, you know, you start with an intent. Solvers compute the best possible routes, unlike other intent-based solutions where, you know, we have, things like Uniswap X, where market makers are just completing orders themselves. You know, we have that functionality as well, but I still think that routing is a lot more interesting because it makes the solver network much more permissionless than, say, a Uniswap X, where it's probably, you know, 20 or so market makers. And so once a user has a route of, you know, all the different steps necessary to happen on chain, this is created in the form of an instruction set, which is passed to what's called the composable VM. And all the composable VM really is essentially a way to interpret instructions in different execution environments. So if you want to bridge and swap between two, three different chains, the obvious question is, well, how do you compose these different chains? And that's exactly what the composable VM is designed for. It's kind of like a cross-chain DSL where like the inputs are JSON and different contracts for different execution environments interpret these instructions and execute upon them accordingly.
Got you. So very developer focused environment. We're trying to, you know, help in the same way that the API analogy, right? So helping developers have like an infrastructure for running their instructions, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Gotcha. Okay. Can you tell us some of your other plans for 2024? What are you most excited about?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say, you know, we've been building for quite some time. So, you know, Picasso Network is beginning to, have its major product releases very soon, you know, restaking on Solana, IBC to Solana, IBC to Ethereum. And then from there, I think the focus, you know, really shifts towards showing the world what's possible with these IBC connections. And so, you know, I'm hoping that, as you mentioned, sometime in 2024, people will be able to do the types of things we're describing on chain as long as they're already onboarded. And hopefully this turns into, you know, a phenomenon where people are doing more things on chain in general. But also people are doing more things on chain versus using sexes. And so, you know, that for me, that's like something in the bull market. I'm hoping that we see a lot more volume and flow within sort of DEX land than we see in sex land. And I hope through, you know, all the work that we've done, we drastically reduce the barrier to entry for people to use these products.
A more general question, do you see DEXs and DeFi now taking a larger role in the ecosystem going forward? You know, considering there's a ETF on the way, and also we've seen some of the biggest exchanges, how do I say this, being humbled by the SEC in the US. Which direction do you think the market is taking?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, the biggest thing, I mean, so, you know, obviously we all have quote unquote normie friends, right? And one of the things that I always see when I'm interacting with, you know, when I try to introduce my normie friends to crypto is like, I never even bother introducing them to like DEX things because it's just too complicated. The onboarding experience for somebody to just make a Coinbase account or a Binance account and then just buy a thing is much, much easier than like, you know, hey, get a wallet, make sure that you write down your private key. Then, hey, like, you know, make sure you don't set your slippage too high. And make sure you pay enough gas to get executed. Make sure you've picked the right token. Make sure you, you know, don't swap in a scam pool. And then, like, you know, liquidity providing is also, like, hard as well, right? Like, you know, make sure you LP within a specific range. Make sure you have enough collateral, like, if you're using, say, DYDX. Like, there's a lot of things that people are, you know, it requires a lot of headspace. And for people who want to just, like, quickly trade markets, it's much easier still to use Vectors. But like, imagine if all these things were, you know, just through a single interface and you sort of almost had like agents to assist with pushing these things forward, right? And managing all this stuff. You know, that people are talking about AI agents. There's not even like a huge need for AI. It's just really just, you know, you just need help. And this help can come in the form of solvers. This help can come in the form of a nice user experience. And so, you know, I think that until we solve these issues, for the most part, things are still going to be very stacks dominated. I mean, we have amazing platforms and protocols for doing things on chain. You know, the amount of experience you need to interact with these things is just way too high right now. I think one of the main reasons why Solana has caught a bunch of interest recently is because you kind of don't have that with Solana. It's a bit more like you have a better user experience just because the chain is cheaper and faster. And so, you know, that just goes to show you that, like, there is appetite to do things on chain. People want to do things on chain, but, you know, until you get a unified user experience, there really won't be much appeal to do things on chain.
Yeah, the problem is both the user experience and the cost, like you mentioned, which also have a, you know, psychological component to it, right? It's scary to take actions when you see that, you know, you can make a costly mistake if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, that's the main concern. You see all the time people getting sandwiched. You see, you know, people just swapping through MetaMask swap, you know, and paying 0.8% for a swap when they can probably just pay 0.3 if they just did it themselves. Like, people are willing to pay for user experience. But we just don't have that many options right now. I think some people who do it really well are people like Marginify, Zerion, you know, Camelot Dex and Arbitrum. So you're starting to see people care more and more about user experience, but I think that we still have a very long way to go, especially within cross-chain. And this is why we focused on building these connections before we address the user experience problem, because even if we fix the user experience problem, you know, using a bridge that takes 20 minutes and can potentially rug your funds is just not an option. And for people who want to move millions of dollars, or, you know, even just somebody who has like a couple hundred bucks and wants to buy an NFT or something like this, getting rubbed on a bridge is not fun. You know, I've been rubbed from Wormhole, I've been rubbed from Ronin, Nomad, pretty much every bridge out there. So that is also like a very big personal driver for why I believe user experience plus interoperability is very important.
So how can our listeners get involved with Picasso and Composable and learn more about you guys?
Yeah, sure. So follow our socials at ComposableFin, at Picasso_network. Feel free to jump into our Discord and Telegram anytime. Check out our docs, docs.composable.finance. And yeah, tune in to more things like this.
Thank you very much, Omar, for taking the time. And good luck with everything you're doing. And we're going to include all the links in the description so everybody can go ahead and follow you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to the Bitcoin.com news podcast. Follow us for more interviews with the most interesting leaders, founders, and investors in the fields of cryptocurrency, decentralized finance, NFTs, and the metaverse.